Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Milford House Mysteries on the BookSpeak Network. I'm Sherry Knowlton. I write the Alexa Williams series of books, Dead of Autumn, Dead of Summer, and Dead of Spring. I'm currently working on the fourth book, Dead of Winter.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jody West. I write the Carlisle Crime Cases, of which there are four, Dying for Vengeance, Courting Doubt and Darkness, Darkness at First Light, and Had a Dying Fall, and featuring homicide detectives Christopher Snow and Aaron McCoy. And I hope my newest book, the fifth adventure, Things Strangled, will be released in the fall of 2018.
Sunbury Press publishes our mystery and suspense novels, and its mystery imprint is Milford House, thus the name Milford House Mysteries. Today, Joan and I are going to discuss how we ground our fiction in fact.
You know, readers may actually not be aware of the amount of research that mystery novelists do for their books, and after all, it's fiction, right? No. In reality, fiction must be grounded in fact. Many mystery novels require significant research to make the story accurate and credible to readers. Today, we'll highlight some of the ways that we do the necessary research to get the facts we need.
We're going to spend a few minutes first on why, why we think it's important to ground our books in fact. But first of all, let's start the discussion with a little bit of information about our books in case you aren't yet a reader. My books are contemporary mystery suspense novels. They feature a young lawyer named Alexa Williams, and she keeps getting involved in dangerous situations. Each novel also contains a historical subplot, and we'll talk more about that later.
And since the Carlisle crime cases are fact-based, meaning the actual crime at the heart of each mystery occurred, facts are crucial to my mysteries because I'm holding a mirror up to reality. My books are called police procedurals. The Carlisle Homicide Squad is an actual entity, and so I had hundreds of questions about police methods, regulation weapons, cop speak, and equipment they use before my characters could do anything credible. Grateful that I found police consultants who were willing to assist me in making the stories and the narrative realistic.
So let's talk about why facts are important in suspense. First, it helps having facts involved in your story help enhance the believability of the fictional plot, helps draw the reader into the fictional story so that it seems more real. Another way of putting it is almost the flip side. If you're accurate, it helps prevent the reader from becoming distracted. So let's imagine you're in the middle of reading a hair-raising scene, and in your inaccurate fact in the book can just jerk you out of the story. Haven't we all watched some movie or TV show when we spot something that's just out of place, it doesn't make sense? Suddenly you're thinking more about that anomaly than you are being caught up in the story. Some movie examples that are, I think, pretty well known are one from Gladiator, the Russell Crowe movie that's set back in Gladiator times. Well, there's a crash of a chariot, and when the chariot turns over, you can see in the movie that there's a gas tank that's been powering that chariot. So it's like, oh, no, that probably didn't happen in Gladiator times. There's a similar scene or a similar anomaly with the Braveheart movie, the Mel Gibson with the, you know, all of the ancient Scots going to battle. And there's one big battle scene where you've got all of these half-naked, kilted warriors jumping up and down, getting ready to run into battle. And in the back, you can see white panel vans. Well, I don't think they had white panel vans back then. So those are the types of, you know, that's sort of a big example of how you see those and suddenly, you're off thinking about panel vans in ancient times versus the actual story.
And third, facts form the bedrock or foundation for fiction that actually situate the reader in time and space, a geographical setting. For example, in Darkness at First Light, I researched the Revolutionary War for months. I went to Valley Forge, read texts and online histories. I studied timelines and interviewed historians until I had a visual scene of not just the places, but the people involved in the Battle of La Mothe, a turning point in the Revolution because the Patriots fought the British to a draw. The Redcoats withdrew over 6,000 troops and 100 wagons from Freehold, New Jersey, to New York City. I had to be familiar enough to put my characters in that actual setting in 1778. And also, I have to admit that the series turn provided an actual visual for me, too, since that was set in the same time.
And what station was that on with that turn? Was that a PBS story?
No, it was on demand, but originally on AMC.
Ah, okay, all right. I'm not as familiar with it, but then I don't think I've researched the Revolutionary War.
Yes.
Well, you know, finally, in terms of the why ground fiction, in fact, accuracy helps increase our credibility as authors. I recently read an interview with a British suspense writer who writes about very technical novels about submarines. And one of the things he said is if he couldn't easily research what was in, you know, the technical piece of the submarine, he just made it up. And I instantly thought, well, you know, I'm not sure I want to read his books because sometimes, you know, fiction, you can get away with making things up. And in fantasy, for instance, you always make things up. But this guy is, you know, holding himself out as an expert. On the opposite end of the spectrum is the thriller author Douglas Preston. He writes one of the co-authors of the Aloysius Pendergrast novels. He just came back from doing research in South America, and he contracted what doctors said was a previously unknown parasite. So I think that type of research is definitely showing dedication to your craft.
Yeah, and so we've talked a little bit about why authors do research, because research is necessary for learning what we don't know. But let's examine the how. How do we get the facts that we need to write accurate fiction? As authors, we need concrete specifics. For me, that means consultants, observation, experience, the internet, and interviews.
And for me, it's pretty similar. I would sort of group it in three key ways, but I don't think it's substantially different. One, I sort of call cracking the books because it reminds me of college. Another is interviewing experts. And the third is gaining hands-on experience by doing it myself or knowing about it myself. And I found that I think for all my novels, I've had to rely on all three types of research. An additional layer, though, is when it comes to incorporating history into the book. Like Joan just talked about a few minutes ago with the Revolutionary War battle, when you are talking about history, it often takes even more in-depth research to make sure you're getting things right, because they are real things that have happened.
But, you know, we could give our listeners more examples of how we do research for our books.
Okay, let's do that.
Well, for my first novel, Dying for Vengeance, I Googled Austin, Texas, JMU, which is in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and Belpre, Ohio, where each of the siblings who were involved in an inheritance dispute lived. As Dying was my very first book, I also researched many other topics that I felt that my detectives really needed to know. That includes Quantico, CODIS, which I learned was a combined DNA index system, police jurisdictions, language, procedures, legal terms, like extradition, subpoena, and due process, because the police have to actually use those terms when they arrest someone, the Cumberland County DA's office, homicide squad, the SWAT team, although Carlisle calls theirs a rapid response team, CSU. Carlisle does not have a crime scene unit, but my books do, and maps of Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. And facts also inform us about a way of knowing the world we live in. We encounter the world through our senses. We see, taste, smell, hear, touch. Research verifies this way of knowing. Our perceptions, assumptions, and experience are all based on these things, these senses. I'd be surprised, for example, to see an elephant walking down the Carlisle streets. So, too, do readers expect realistic treatment in detective fiction to actually mirror police work? My CPD correspondent from the Carlisle Police Squad, he taught me about regulation gear for cops. For example, they carry a Glock 30, which is a semi-automatic pistol. He taught me about 10 code. For example, 1019 means return to the station, and what's your 20 means what's your location, and a host of other information that my detectives needed to know how to function. I also research police procedures for canvassing a murder scene, forensics, drug use among teens, PTSD. One of my detectives is an Iraqi war veteran, and he has to cope with the disorder when he returns to the Carlisle Homicide Squad. On the historical level, I studied muskets, rifles, period clothing, food, events, all leading up to the Battle of Monmouth in Freehold, New Jersey, for which Mary Ludwig Hayes became famous. And the level of research that I did in Courting Doubt and Darkness, mainly Native American heritage and fracking in the Marcellus shale industry being the most complex, and then also in Darkness, the very first scene I had to learn about how they handle an Amber Alert. The information is so detailed that I list resources at the end of the books. I learned that, for example, over 500 chemicals and millions of gallons of water are used to frack or break the shale beneath the surface. And finally, for How to Die and Fall and Things Strangled, I listed my main resources in the acknowledgement page for those who want to delve further into the subject or look up the social issues.
Well, that's a lot of research. And for me, the story is somewhat similar. A lot of the research that I do, as I mentioned before, I liken it to researching a term paper in school, although, of course, I'm doing it for fun since I like to write these novels. One of the main sources that I use now that, at least when I went to school, didn't exist, I rely on the Internet. The Google is truly amazing. And you can find not only a lot of summary data out there about things, but you can find a lot of source data out there online. One of the key things I'd mention are newspapers from the time that something happened, from a historical period, and I use those a lot. Sometimes I also turn to books, magazines, video sources for more in-depth research. Just some highlights of the types of topics I've researched using the Internet and books, the whole cracking the books thing, include the Underground Railroad, the Civil War that touched on South Central Pennsylvania, abortion procedures, the militia movement in the United States, United Nations and other refugee NGOs, their agents, what they are as agencies and what their procedures are. Also NGOs, non-governmental organizations that help prevent and rescue victims of sex trafficking and other human trafficking. Statistics. Sometimes my characters need to know some statistics, like on abortion or sex trafficking. Criminal charges and penalties. The types of guns. Effects of gunshot wounds on glass. You know, what kind of bullet will break glass? Effects of gunshot wounds on people. The history of Land Rovers in the United States. Different religions, the Bible, animism, Theravada Buddhism. You need to also ground your stories in the right time period. Even contemporary baby names are often not the names that people were giving, like the names that are used today aren't necessarily the names that older characters in your books would have been given. So baby names of a certain era, slang from those eras. A second key area of research that I talked about was interview with experts, and Joan mentioned that too. And it's important to talk to experts whenever possible. And it's amazing. I've found it very amazing how helpful and generous people are with their time. I have a source in the Pennsylvania State Police, a state trooper. She's been very helpful telling me and about police procedures that the state police would use. How they would approach an investigation, who in the state police would approach a certain type of investigation. I interviewed a Carlisle police sergeant in the town of Carlisle about missing child procedures. And although I'd done a lot of research online before I spoke to him, he gave me so much more information and brought me up to date on some recent changes in national laws and reporting requirements. I incorporated all that into the story at Dead of Summer. Other types of experts I've relied upon, including a law school professor who worked on international sex trafficking cases at The Hague, a Cumberland County judge who helped me frame the correct charges for certain crimes that people in my book had done. I've talked to experts in adoption and foster care, state regulators who oversee hydraulic fracturing, and also a landowner who had leased his property to a fracking company, so to get the different perspectives. It's interesting that both Joan and I have done work about fracking, which has been a big deal here in Pennsylvania over the recent years. I've also discussed things with Planned Parenthood to get details about family planning and abortion. I spoke to the National Park Service to find out how arrest procedures work if you're arrested on the National Mall. I have a physician contact who helps me describe medical issues like gunshot wounds. My handy-dandy brother-in-laws have helped me talk about particular types of guns since they're more expert than I. I have some Thai friends who helped me name some Thai characters in Dead of Summer, and a local farmer who I reached out to helped me with information about crop cycles and scary farm machinery. I'll stop talking now, but that's just a smattering of the type of experts that I've spoken to.
Well, and then, too, of course, some of the places and plot lines come from personal experience, like the novel setting. My Carlisle crime cases are set, yes, in the greater Carlisle area in Cumberland County because that's where I live. I'm familiar with this area, its parks, its scenes, its city streets, its graveyard, where Molly Pitcher lies, who inspired Darkness at First Light. But again, I want to emphasize that research tells us what we do not know. It's key to authenticity. I also took photographs, walked around the old Carlisle Cemetery where Mary Ludwig Hayes is buried, to describe it accurately. And most people refer to her as Molly Pitcher, but one of the writers in my writing group pointed out that there were a number of Molly Pitchers who worked during that time, so I'm trying to be careful to mention Mary Ludwig Hayes. Another example would be the Detective Aaron McCoy was assigned a canine her partner's former partner returned from Iraq. And the canine behavior, although I did research through newspapers and the training center, the canine behavior, I also based some of the more personal quirks whose name is E.T.
Yeah, well, I think your canine in your books is a pretty smart dog, pretty smart cookie.
Yeah. Thanks.
My books are also set in South Central Pennsylvania because that's where I've lived most of my life. My heroine, my protagonist, Alexa, lives in a cabin near the Michaux State Forest with her English Mastiff Scout. I also live in the forest of South Central Pennsylvania and have been graced with a series of mastiffs in my life. So much of the geography, the culture, the sense of place in my books, I believe, comes just from the fact that I've lived here and I know the area. And I think that personal experience has also been helpful when I've written about some of the more exotic or faraway places that appear in my books. Part of Dead of Summer takes place in Africa, partly on safari, and my husband and I have been on several safaris to the Serengeti. We also visited Samburu Park in northern Kenya, where part of the book takes place. And there's a refugee incident in Dead of Summer that I describe that's very loosely based on something that we encountered in the Nairobi airport, but I made it a lot more sinister in the book. I've also been to Thailand, which plays an important role in Dead of Summer. There I met some of the hill tribes of Burma, Laos, and the Golden Triangle up in northern Thailand, and that's a key element in the second book. And then finally, Italy, one of my favorite places. In Dead of Spring, Alexa goes to Tuscany and Umbria. And so I drew upon my trips there for those descriptions as well.
Well, in my case, with five novels, the personal experience embedded in my books is too numerous to list individually. So I'll just say that I primarily visit the sites to gain a visual perspective. And the most recent example would be for Thing Strangled. It's a story of actors who are visiting Carlisle to film a documentary about Frank Woolworth. And a note is I learned as part of my research that the first successful Woolworth Five and Dime was opened in Lancaster, PA. But I used the excuse that there were too many tourists there. That was the reason they were filming in Carlisle. But I used my experience working with behind the candy counter in Cincinnati during my college years to describe the physical replica. And then I married that with the research that I learned to describe the merchandise that was available when Woolworth started the stores. He is known as the Merchant Prince for opening the first five and dime stores, and then he opened most of them between 1879 and 1900. And so I tried to, keep according to the research, I tried to keep the items that he had available true to history.
Wow, working behind the candy counter. I'm not sure I could do
that. It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking more that I would sample the wares too often. So still talking about personal experience. The two of the books, the historical subplots, in Dead of Summer, it takes place in Woodstock, the 1969 Woodstock, the real Woodstock. And Dead of Spring, the historical subplot, deals with the Three Mile Island nuclear crisis, which happened in 1979. Although I drew liberally on my own experience in both of those instances, I still needed to do a lot of research to refresh my memory, to get timelines straight, to find what different major players said and so forth. Just talking about Woodstock, for example, there's a quote that says, "If you remember Woodstock, you weren't really there." So, that's a joke, mostly about all the marijuana and other drugs that were prevalent. But that aside, it was more than 40 years ago. So when writing, I found that I remembered some pieces, but things like, well, which bands played in which order? When did it rain? It rained a lot, but when was that, on what days? When did the music start and finish each day? Those are just some examples, but luckily there's a huge amount out there that's been written about Woodstock, so I watched the movie, I listened to some taped accounts from other people who had been there that are out online, helped me flesh out the details that I needed.
And, we mentioned recreating history before, but I'd like to emphasize that again, about how the additional level of research that requires. Historical fiction is a genre that depicts actual events and people. It captures a real place, a time period, and often famous historic figures. The fictional retelling of that historical event involves a balance between accuracy and the author's imagination. As I mentioned earlier, I have a historical subplot in Darkness at First Light, which depicts the Battle of Monmouth in the Revolutionary War. Because one of the reenactors was murdered in the old Carlisle Cemetery. Don't worry, it's not a spoiler, because that's on the opening page and the opening scene of the book. The major participants in that battle include General George Washington, Charles Lee, Marquis Lafayette, and Baron Frederick von Steuben. And I learned that he trained the militia and then wrote the manual for the regulation and discipline of the Revolutionary Militia during that time. And also the British generals Howe and Clinton were there. And so were John Hayes and his wife, Mary Ludwig Hayes. That entailed reading numerous books to nail the actual events and describe the people involved.
So with the historical theme, I talked a little bit about two of my historical subplots, Woodstock and Three of My Island, and let's call them modern-day history to make me feel a little bit better about my age. But my first book, Dead of Autumn, goes further back. It goes to the Great Depression, and it's a fictionalized account of something that actually happened, the murder of three young girls who were found by hunters under a blanket in the woods here in Cumberland County in 1934, that Cumberland County, Pennsylvania. It was a national sensation. Newspapers covered it everywhere because the police couldn't figure out who the girls were. The newspapers report that more than 10,000 people filed by the girls' dead bodies to try to identify them. And for that, I relied a lot on newspaper accounts. There's some local historical books about this as well that I read. And newspapers.com is an excellent source for, real-time newspapers from past years.
Sherry, that's a very famous case. That took a lot of chutzpah to write about the babes in the woods. I even knew that when I heard of that in Ohio. So that's a well-publicized. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, wrapping up, it's important to emphasize that while research and accuracy are important, they're just tools. The actual story comes from the author's mind, his or her imagination. And ultimately, the author must make the story his or her own. And even though we use the research, both historical and other types, in the background, it should never really be obvious, because we don't want readers to get the sense that they're getting data dumped on them. But it's a good idea that that you do the research so that your information is accurate. And also tells writers, we have to make that decision about, you know, what do we include, the most important things, obviously, and what to leave out.
Well, and there it is. That's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed hearing about some of the work that goes on behind the scenes in an author's life as we're writing that book.
And as a reminder to all you readers, our books are available at Sunbury Press's online bookstore, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other crime retailers and bookstores. And you can ask any independent bookstore owner to order the book for you, including the Bookery in Carlisle at Boston Memorial Library. They carry both of our books, both of us, Sherry's and my books. And I'd also like to extend a special thanks to all of you for listening to the Milford House Mysteries. We hope you enjoyed our program. Our next program is on Thursday, May 10th. And on that day, our guest will be Don Dooley, who's the author of more than 40 books, including biographies.
40, wow.
Yes, American Culture and Mysteries, the Paul Stanley Mysteries. And they include the Fantasy Leadburgers, the Green Triangles, and the Bolivian Sailor.
Well, until then, you can follow us on social media. I'm on the web at www.sherrynolton.com. Plus, I have a Facebook author page, and I'm on Twitter.
And I'm on facebook.com/Carlisle Crime Cases by J.M. West. Where I try to post information weekly. I don't always, but I try to. So until next time.
See you all. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.